two items on the agenda, Mr. Chairman. Item number one is an application for rezoning for 5198 Roblin Boulevard under file DAZ 235 of 2007 with an accompanying variance application to permit a rear yard of 10 feet instead of 25 feet. I believe the applicant is present, Mr. Chairman.
Great. The applicant would like to come up. And you are, ma'am?
My name is Karen Ress, and I'm with MMM Group.
Okay.
And with me, I have Bob Reed from Pioneer Petroleum, as well as Misty Scar from MMM Group as well. So I'm just handing out a quick presentation that I'll just go through, and you can follow along then. So we're all looking at the same information.
Yes, sir.
Great. Okay, if we just turn to the second page, I'd just like to introduce Pioneer Petroleums for anyone who's not aware of the company. They are an independent petroleum marketer based in Ontario. They've been in business for over 50 years and currently operate over 160 locations in Canada. They've recently purchased 9 sites within the city, and they plan to redevelop the properties to meet or exceed all environmental guidelines. And one of the properties is the existing ESSO site at Roblin and Pepperloaf, and Pioneer Petroleums would like to upgrade the existing site to better meet the needs of the surrounding neighborhood. So the third page just shows the location of the existing site. So it's at the southeast corner of Roblin and Pepperloaf. The next page just gives a quick project summary. The site is currently zoned C1, which does not permit fuel sales. However, there is an existing gas station and convenience store on site, and I think the history of how that came to be there is included in the planner's report. So Pioneer Petroleums would like to redevelop the site and maintain the existing uses of the gas station and the convenience store. There will be the same number of fueling stations, is the plan, and the existing convenience store will be is just under 2,200 square feet, and the new proposed convenience store is 2,400 square feet, so a slight increase in size. But basically, the existing uses will be redeveloped on the site. In order to do this, in order to rebuild the existing site, they need to rezone to C2. I just also wanted to note that the convenience store may, in the future, include a walk-up food or coffee counter. There's no tenants online for that. Strictly walk up, buy your coffee, and that kind of thing. Not a full serve restaurant.
That's not, is that similar to like an A&W that are in the Petro-Cans and that sort of service is kind of different?
No.
No, it won't be any for that magnitude.
No.
Okay. But your application actually calls for a restaurant with 14 seats.
It allows for the development of that. They have no tenant signed at the moment. It allows further the development of that in the future. Yes.
So you leave it open for now, and then in the future build a wall or something?
No, it's not a separate parcel. It's open within the convenience store. It's
so,
that kind
so
of a development.
It would be similar to the A&W situation in
Canada. Yeah, I guess if you look at it, it wouldn't be an A&W.
It's going to be inside. It's going to be the same hours as.
Exactly the same hours.
Community
store, right.
It would be separate staff, probably. But
what the process is here is we're looking at making it into like a coffee bistro with the neighborhood style of coffee shop. They can come in. Potentially, it could be a self-serve offer, or there could be a body behind serving coffee, but still have 12 or 14 seats out front so they can sit down, have their coffee, and then move on their way. That's the intent.
Okay. Now I have a question, James, about this. Because I just got caught on this not long ago. If this restaurant is not 2,500 square feet, all of a sudden there can be a patio outside because it's within the 2,500 square feet of the restaurant. How do we deal with that? Because patio outside should not be permitted.
Did they,
yet it is under the existing bylaw. If they go ahead, because it's not going to be 2,500 square feet. Mind you, I don't know how you're going to do that. I mean, if it's part of the convenience store square footage, then it is. Like, how would you rule on that?
No, it's separate. It'd be considered an 800 square foot restaurant, but there's no room on the site to have any outdoor seating. You've got the loading zone immediately shown to the west, parking to the east of the building. If they took out any parking stalls, they would have to come back for variance, something like that. I can't see them being able to fit any outdoor seating on the site based on the configuration and the bylaw.
That Starbucks at the east end, they don't have a lot of parking. I mean, mind you, they do right now because one bay is empty. But if that was a restaurant, too, like the KFC was in there or something, or Pizza Hut, if that was a restaurant, too, and you got the Subway, and you got the Starbucks, then you're starting to be deficient parking.
I'm sure based on the smaller size of this site, they wouldn't be able to fit it, and the bylaw would pick it up. That's my impression of this. I haven't looked at it in detail.
You would not be going down that avenue.
No, I just don't want to get caught there. I got like I've always been of the belief that outdoor patios were a conditional use or required a variance at the very least. And one all of a sudden showed up, and I've got some people that have a problem with it. And had there been a public hearing, I could have done something with fencing to mitigate the problem.
Right.
There was no public hearing, and the reason why was because that particular restaurant is 1,600 square feet, and until it's 2,500 square feet, it doesn't kick in. So they made the patio fit within the 2,500 square feet. They didn't require public hearing, and
But right now,
I learned a new trick. So I'm.
Yeah.
Now I'm being careful.
Right now, my understanding is that we have exactly the number of parking spaces required that we can fit on site. There really is no additional spaces to put more parking spots. Okay. So we have nowhere. If we wanted to build a patio, there's nowhere to do it. We would have to build it on a parking space, and then we don't meet the bylaw requirements. So there's nowhere to put any outdoor patio. The site is quite small, and it's constrained, and there's just we don't have the space, quite frankly.
I would have no problem with that being written in one of the conditions.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
Okay. On the next page, we have the proposed site plan that we presented at our first open house that was held on March 17th. You can see that the convenience store is located in this plan on the east side of the site, along the east edge of the site, and then we have parking along the south side. Next page. We received several comments back. The three bullets listed here are basically the summary points. The first one was the neighboring residents wanted the building kept in its current location to block light from the residences on Pepperloaf. The second major point that was brought up was that they wanted the garbage bin moved away from the residences. And the third point that we heard over several times was to eliminate the existing lane that's behind the current building. So we had a second open house on May 13th of this year, and we presented the site plan on the following page. So you can see we've made several changes to alleviate some of the concerns of the residents. The first thing that we did was we moved the building back to the south edge of the property. In approximately the same location as the existing building, we've moved the garbage enclosure to the northeast corner, so closer to Roblin and away from the residences on Pepperloaf. And there is no lane behind the building. It'll be a landscape strip that runs along that with no sidewalk of any kind for people to get back there. The next page just indicates the landscape plan. You can see that where there's trees planned, in basically along the east edge, the northeast corner, and then along the back of the property, along the south edge that borders the adjacent residential property.
Is there shrubbery or trees and that sort of thing right now?
Right now, there is not on the existing property. The neighboring property, the residence located immediately to the south, has some very large trees located very close to the property line, and those currently overhang onto the property. So we won't be able to build to put any plantings under that just because of the mature.
It'll never grow.
No, exactly.
Those are the dotted circles.
Yeah, those are the dotted circles. Those are the adjacent property trees.
Those are willows.
Yeah. So what we would do is we can plant on either side of those, but beneath that, yeah, nothing will grow just because of the
stonewashed stones.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, and we would have a fence along there that would be built to accommodate those existing mature trees back there.
Okay.
Any questions about the landscaping?
And the building is. Building the way you've got it drawn, a setback roughly 10 feet.
Yes.
My understanding, I think under James, I don't know if I'm right about that. Under C2 that they have now, although they have C1, under C1 that they have now, they could build within 2 feet.
0 feet.
0 feet.
A 0 foot fence. Under C1, if a new building was to be built there that met every other part of the bylaw, it could be built at 0 feet to the rear lot line.
Under C2?
C2, 25 feet.
Okay, so the variance is for that 50 feet.
Yeah.
Okay. The next page, I just wanted to note that we did make a very minor change to the site plan that was presented at the May 13th meeting. We moved the garbage enclosure one spot over to meet the city's requirements. So that's the only, that's the change, basically. We've moved it back one parking stall. And that will be the plan that we'd be moving forward with, that one change.
There's 12 parking on the one for seniors.
Yes, the handicap stall.
Everybody 60 plus has got one with guards and things. How are you qualifying now?
There won't be any back doors to along the south side
of the building?
No, there's no walkway there. There'll be no snow clearing there. There'd be nothing there. No,
what we're
no
proposing
access
to carry back the landscaping is your comment made of stones. This is what we intend doing. The larger river rock.
Yeah.
Weeds don't have a tendency to grow in that as much, and if there is any foot traffic through there, it's going to be harder to walk through if there is any. Hopefully we can eliminate that.
Yeah, it says sod on here, but you're talking about it.
Yeah, no, it would be.
This is something that's come up after the fact.
It won't grow underneath those trees.
It won't grow underneath the canopy of willows anyways.
No, exactly.
No.
So.
And there won't get any sun.
No.
So.
Councillor Clement, clarification. There is a small footnote under the setbacks required. Under C1, it is a 0 foot rear setback. The footnote is, unless the rear lot line in a commercial or industrial zoning district is adjacent to the rear lot line of an R1, single family residential, or R2, which this is the case, then a side yard of 10 feet.
Well, it's not. It's not adjacent. Adjacent to a rear yard.
Thought it referred to a rear yard, but it says a side yard. So I'm not 100% sure if they could build at zero on the rear yard. This says side yard, but at the most they would have to provide 10 feet if they were adjacent to a residence.
Well, what's a side yard?
This is a side yard. This would be.
This is a side yard.
That's the rear yard because the front yard is Roblin,
facing the other way,
and the sides are the east and west.
Oh, so their rear yard.
Their rear yard is the south property line, and it does not say rear yard here. So it says side yard, where they'd have to provide 10 feet. You would think it would be the rear yard as well if they're adjacent to residential. So 10 feet could be maximum that they would have to provide if it was C1 and they were building a new building.
All right.
Sure. If we flip to page 10, just go over some of the comments that we got after our second open house. We got some positive comments. I've noted those in quotations. These are direct quotes off of the comment sheets. So we heard that moving the building back to its original location is positive. Likewise, moving the garbage bin to the northeast corner, 1,000% better. Thank you for the opportunity to consult. I'm happy to keep the SL station in our neighborhood. And nice to see our comments about the new layout were listened to. We also heard received some concerns on the comment sheet. Two main ones came forward. The first one were the hours of operation. Again, I've listed the direct quotes from the comment sheet. Basically, the concerns were related to maintaining the existing hours of operation and not going to 24. And the planner's report recommends keeping the hours of operation the same, and we are totally fine with that. So we will be maintaining the existing hours of operation.
7 in the morning to 10 at night.
That's correct.
And that's 7 days?
Yes. The second concern that came forward several times had to do with the approach on Pepperloaf Crescent. We did contact Public Works, and I think, again, some of that is listed in the planner's report. We contacted them regarding the existing location, which is adjacent to, very close to Roblin, and our new proposed access, which we have shifted further down, and the department concurred with our moving the access to the south, that it was safer from a traffic operations perspective, and that the existing location does not conform to their standards.
How many feet to go from that?
It's about 22. It's further at the corner stop, but it's 22.5 meters, so it's about 50 feet. The back of it would be close to 55 feet from Roblin.
Right.
I'm taking these two numbers here.
Right.
So if you run that through like that, it's longer out here. So there's got to be at least 1.5 meters here, which is another foot and a half. So it's got to be getting close to, with the set piece added on here, about 70 feet to here. I don't know how far it is all of that.
What that allows to happen is that if there's northbound traffic on Pepperloaf that is approaching Roblin and is stopped at the stop sign, with the current access, they are stopped, waiting at the stop sign next to the access on Pepperloaf. By moving it south, you allow 2 to 3 cars to stack before the access, so that somebody coming eastbound on Roblin wouldn't expect to be able to make that quick maneuver into the station. They have to make a right turn, head south, and then make a 90-degree right turn, drive south, and make a 90-degree left turn. Right now, they can kind of drive almost straight into the site, which is not a very safe situation if there's a car approaching northbound on Pepperloaf.
And once again, you said you consulted with their Public Works Department and said it's safe.
Yes, and they prefer the proposed access location.
It's approximately 40 feet from the south property line. That's where it is. It's 11. It's almost 12 meters. It's probably 40, 41 or 42. Thereabouts.
Yeah. Okay. Some of the local residents also contacted Public Works with a request to conduct a volume and speed study on Pepperloaf. And this study was conducted by Public Works in May of this year. The average 24-hour traffic volume that they recorded on the street was just over 1,500 vehicles per day. Public Works noted, and this is a quote from them, that the traffic volumes recorded on Pepperloaf Crescent between Roblin Boulevard and Robindale Road are not out of the normal range to be expected for a street such as this. So they also conducted the speed study, and the results, the average speed recorded was 43 kilometers per hour, and that is not enough to warrant the installation of speed hump on Pepperloaf, which is the city's criteria, I guess, to establish that there is a speeding issue in order to install speed humps to mitigate that issue.
James, in that report that came from Public Works, how many homes were between Chuckle, Bull Hill, Robindale?
150 approximately.
150 homes?
And basically, generally speaking, residential homes generate approximately 10 vehicle trips per day in and out, so 1,500 is what you would expect.
But there's also a community club there.
There's a community center on Pepperloaf, yes.
So it's fairly close to what it should, what the average would be.
Yeah, that was detailed in the email from the Public Works Department, yes. And that's basically what we had to present. Are there any other questions that you'd like us to answer?
Questions, Councilor Norton? Questions?
Bill, there's no sidewalk on Pepperloaf, is there?
No.
No. None of those streets have any. Sidewalks are local improvements. Most people have got trees and shrubs and things growing out into the boulevards, and some cases people are landscaped right out there. If you we try to stick a sidewalk on some of those streets, you do more harm than, well, from a green aspect. Most people wouldn't appreciate it. Plus, they got to pay for it on a residential street or something. The traffic there is, to be honest with you, I was surprised by that. I thought it would be more. Because of the community club. A lot of streets. There are other streets that feed there a little bit. You get a street like Vanscoy. I don't know whether Vanscoy was in the mix or not, but Vanscoy is west of Pepperloaf on runoff. People will feed from there. You might even get the odd person feeding from community or something like that on occasion. If they were dropping kids off at the daycare or that kind of stuff, because there's a daycare all day long at Robin Park as well. Which would cause at least a few trips in the morning, but there hasn't been much change. There isn't really anywhere to change anything in that general area. Even if land developed in South Charles, it wouldn't be directed down through there in any case. So there isn't really
anything to change. Scotts get that.
Well, you know, I mean, if that plan we're looking at triggered those 2,500 lots over 20 years or whatever time it would take to build them, there'd be an east-west road running across to the extension of the parkway to try and keep traffic off of the grid streets anyways. But because of Glenbush, the way that it's built, and the fact that the Hart Trail is protected and we don't want to be crossing it any more than we are now, nothing from that future development would come down through here anyway, other than have to kind of tic-tac-toe the way around the community and get down the community behind with some of the kids from there and part of that. But it's not going to, I don't see them doing that kind of thing to come down to the gas. So. Anyhow, I've been asking questions throughout. There may be more, but you get a chance to come back and opinion. Right? So,
thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
For something else after hearing
sure.
Everybody.
Okay, another person in support, is it Carlo Wagner?
Yeah, I wrote down the wrong name for Florida.
Okay, so.
Sorry, I haven't done this before, and okay. I just assumed
I'm you're in,
my
you're in opposition, or you're?
Yes.
Okay, great.
I apologize.
Okay, is there anyone else here to speak in favor of the application? All right, we'll lay it right along to people that are opposed. First person is Eric Wagner. Would you like to speak, sir, or do you want to just register your? Your opposition? Sure. Okay, the next person is Bonnie, is it Hutchinson?
Yes.
Okay. Would you like to speak, ma'am? Or?
Just register, ma'am.
Okay. Kathy, is it Bilos?
I'd like to register my opposition.
Okay.
I'd like to have freedom to speak, like come up with something after
I'm going
to
speak first.
Sure, if you'd like, yeah, absolutely. You're Larry? Okay, absolutely.
We all might want to speak because he doesn't hit all the points.
Okay, we already did, so I guess if, yeah. Why don't I put your name after, then you can speak.
That would be great.
Okay. I'll go ahead, right
there. Why don't you down there?
None of us really understood how that went.
We can all be in opposition, but I need a little more help than that.
Okay.
Larry Velas, live at 511 Pepperloaf Crescent. We basically reside in the property immediately adjacent south of the Roblin Essel, at 5198 Roblin Boulevard. Basically, what I provided here is kind of a synopsis of our concerns, which is basically a summary of the discussions we had with a number of the residents in the area. Again, we sort of grouped it together in terms of the two files. The main issue of concern, obviously, is the rezoning from C1 to C2, with the intent of going from commercial C1 commercial neighborhood designation to a C2 commercial community designation. The assuming that goes ahead, the fallout of that is the application for the variance to a 25 or a 10-foot rear yard from the 25 designated rear yard requirement for C2. As M&M Group indicated, there was two public information sessions that were held. The first presented the proposal to construct a new structure along the east property line. The second presented a proposal to construct a new structure basically in the general vicinity of the present building. The latter proposal was, as I've indicated, basically in response to concerns that were raised by ourselves and other immediate neighbors on the impact of losing the buffer of the fueling, or buffer to the fueling operations that's provided by the existing building. Basically, construction of a new structure and the operation of fuel sales, convenience store, coffee bar, restaurant is what's really prompted the request for rezoning to C2. And again, construction of the new structure at the current location under the C2 zoning is really what's created the prompt for a need for variance on the rear yard setback. Again, we discussed the above with our adjacent neighbors along with other residents in the immediate area. And the general consensus from the residents is that we are not in favor of the rezoning application for the above-mentioned property from C1 to C2. Specifically, we have signed a petition from 27 residents. These residents are located along Pepperloaf, south from Roblin Boulevard, pretty much up to Bow Hill Lane. We have residents north of Roblin within Heartland Cove, which is immediately north of the Essel service station, as well as the immediate residents on Hearthstone Road, south of the existing commercial development. And a copy of the petition is attached with the signatures. Basically, as outlined on the attached petition, the intent of the C1 zoning is to accommodate small compact commercial development within the surrounding land use and to serve the convenience of an immediate neighborhood. The present operation, fuel sales, has been grandfathered based on historical development and is already in contravention of the C1 zoning guidelines and, in our eyes, negatively impacting the existing residential development immediately to the south, southwest, and north. These are basically the residents that we had gone to in terms of getting the petition signed as well and talked to in terms of their concerns as well as our concerns. The individuals who have signed the petition have concerns respecting the current hours of operation, the unsightliness of the existing operation, primarily the noise that's generated by the existing operation and the traffic associated with the existing operation. And are against a permanent change to the more liberal C2 zoning on the basis that it would further increase the allowable size of structure that could be constructed. It would allow relatively unrestricted use of the property with respect to the nature of business operations, including permitting 24-hour operation. It would further increase the level of traffic and noise within a residential area and would reduce the value of nearby residential property. Since setting up the petition and talking to the residents and attending the two open houses that M&M Group and Pioneer Petroleum have put on, we have reviewed the recent reports that were prepared by a Planning and Land Use Division dated May 14th, specifically on the variance, and May 29th, 2008, on the primary application for C1 to C2, and note that Mr. Veach has... Is Veach? Is correct. Mr. Veach has addressed some of the above concerns in his recommendations and our conditions for approval. However, we still have a number of concerns with the proposed development. I guess just for clarification, we'd like to note that the existing service center, although it's classified as a convenience store, it basically is a retail service for selling the fuel sales, as well as a small convenience area, which basically occupies not quite half of the building. The other half of the building basically is storage. It used to be the old service center. It was a 2 or 3 bay service center. It's not used for convenience sales right now. Basically just open storage for the or the service center that's, as it stands now. So in our eyes, it's not a full-scale convenience store. It's really a partial convenience store. And I guess going through the words here, we do make note of that a few times, so just put that in context for people. In terms of the size of the structure and our concern with that, Mr. Veach has indicated that the size of the property, which is about 19,000 square meters, and current property layout limits potential commercial site development. We agree with this. However, we still prefer that any future development on the property would be should be restricted to the C1 size limitations of 5,000 square meters. This size restriction meets the needs of the existing operation and proposed plan and still serves the intent of the C1 zoning philosophy of accommodating small, compact commercial development within or surrounding residential land use and to serve the convenience of the neighborhood. With regards to unrestricted use of the property, again, Mr. Veach has addressed this issue of unrestricted use of the property with the inclusion of several non-permitted land uses. However, we would request that the non-permitted use of the site also include recreational amusement facilities, pawn shop, and car wash operations. However, we are still concerned that a C2 zoning designation could open the door to expanded site development in the future, and on this basis request that the operation continue to be grandfathered under the C1 zoning designation. The biggest concern we have here is if this gets put through as the current proposed development plan under C2, 5 years, this company is on business. Are we now at risk that anything under C2 can be developed on this property? And that's the biggest concern that the residents have. Basically, everybody respects that it is an existing gas station, has been in that operation for a number of years, and are prepared to continue in that operation. But the preference would be under the C1 or some conditional approval to the C1 zoning, not going to the C2 zoning. Hours of operation, again, with respect to the hours of operation, Mr. Beach has addressed this issue with the condition of limiting the hours of operation from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. This goes a long way in addressing the concerns of the residents that the site not be operated on a 24-hour basis. This was a major concern with virtually everybody we talked to. And the fact that C2 does open the door for that. Our preference is still to retain the C1 designation so that we can control those hours of operation in the future. We really don't want to be coming back and forth every time there's a request for a change in hours. Our preference would actually be to apply the C1 retail closing guideline of 9 p.m., not 10 p.m. The concern of many of the residents has been the increase in noise with the current operation following closure of the vehicle servicing and a switch to partial convenience sales. Again, when the service center was operating a number of years ago, basically selling gas, providing services, or servicing of vehicles, the noise level, that's when we moved in there, the noise level was quite low. Ever since the service station basically went out of business and the operation went to more of a convenience-type sales in terms of fast food-type stuff and cigarettes, that type of sales, the noise level has gone up significantly since that time. And again, that's one of our concerns, to if you increase the convenience sales even further and go with the restaurant, the coffee bar type arrangement, is this going to even get compounded?
Larry, just a question. In terms of the service center that was open prior, was it open until 9 or 10 o'clock? Like, what time was that open to the service center?
Basically, to our understanding, we did track down the previous owner because we weren't sure the original hours. Our thought was maybe they were less, and that was part of the issue of the noise, but he indicated that actually the hours were, he said to 11, which I don't imagine it being worse than what it was now, but I'm guessing it was to 10. He couldn't quite recall, but he did indicate it was later.
It just seems to me that, you know, if you had a service center, you know, the noises that are made kind of with that perspective, kind of repairing cars might be a little bit more than kind of going in and out of.
I think what happened was typically he probably shut down the servicing by 6. The fuel sales probably went later in the evening. And I don't recall it actually operating that late in the evening, but he did indicate that he thought it was to, they were open to 10 or 11 anyway, so. But not specifically for servicing, but my wife talked to him specifically, so I don't know.
It was open when I lived in Charleston.
The service part?
No, the gas station was open until 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Because that was before the Charleston Bridge and we had to come around for all that.
Yeah.
In terms of traffic, there was a significant concern amongst the residents respecting the level of traffic on Pepperlow Crescent and the hazards posed to the local residents and community park users. This concern is compounded with potential increase in traffic that could result from the proposed operation of a full-scale convenience store, coffee bar type of restaurant arrangement. Mr. Veach notes in his analysis that the proposed rezoning and redevelopment will allow significant site and operational improvements without significantly increasing the intensity of the use. However, even the proponent, when we talked to him at the open house presentations, indicated the basis for the proposal was a potential increase in sales expected from an expanded convenience store operation, and in particular the coffee bar restaurant arrangement. The proponent indicated at the open house sessions that they were in discussion with, again, no tenant had been selected, but they indicated they were in discussion with all the major coffee bar chains respecting operation of their proposed coffee bar. And in this regard, we are concerned that they will go down that route. It won't just be a stand-up coffee bar. It will be a restaurant-type arrangement. And in this regard, we just flagged that all you have to do is look down the road for anybody in the Charleswood area as to the Tim Hortons at the Forest Park Mall and the amount of traffic that's increased without operation. So on that basis, we did request the city undertake a traffic study along Pepperloaf Crescent to assess the level of traffic and vehicle speeds, and a copy of the email response from the city is attached to the handout we provided you. As noted, the traffic speeds do not appear to be an issue, and Ms. Desjardins, who provided the email response to us, also noted that the average daily trip generation rates are within the normal range of 1,500 vehicle trips per day. And again, as M&M Group had indicated, this is based on 10 people or 10 trips per residence. What they did is they factored in all the residences along Pepperloaf from Roblin to the community center, Robindale, and the other side streets. Came up with 150 homes, 10 trips per day, and that was 1,500. The actual measure was 1,524. They did reference the Institute of Transportation Engineers trip generation manual, which we looked up on the internet to see what that all meant in terms of numbers. We do clarify that one point that was raised in one of the documents that we were able to get our hands on was an indication that anything over 750 was a normal threshold that would generate a more detailed traffic analysis. So we do have some concerns that that is a typical threshold, and again, we're not the experts, but if that is a threshold number, that we're basically double that number. Ms. Desjardins also noted in her report that the average number of day trips per residence is 10. In the documents that we were able to obtain from online from the Institute of Transportation Engineers, there's a table attached that indicates and highlighted some of the key information. Actually, the last page there. It basically gives the average day trips for various uses, and it's correct. Single family home average day trip is 9.55, so her count of 10 is correct. However, we'd like to point out for comparison, they do list the average number of day trips for a service station is 170 per pump, which is quite a number. We also like to point out that if you look at convenience market, 24 hour operation, that number increases significantly to 740 average day trips per 1,000 square gross square foot area of building. Convenience store with gas pumps even goes higher to 850 average trips per day per 1,000 gross feet of floor area. So based on these numbers, I guess we do raise the concern that we think there will be a significant impact on the traffic associated with this development if it was to go to full C2, full convenience store, and gas bar restaurant type arrangements.
Larry, I got a question for you just in terms of the parking. You know, I guess the concern you have is that people are going to pull up kind of later at night and they'll stop and have their coffee or whatever else. But wouldn't most people pull up on the Roblin side as opposed to going up Pepper? Pepperloaf.
Actually, right now, all the traffic that comes in pulls up between the building and Pepperloaf. There's a partially because, well, it's always been obvious almost from day one, but more recently, or the last number of years, they put a propane tank on the west side or east side of the property. So there is more limited parking on the east side, which does drive everybody to park on the west side of the property, which is one of the issues on the noise side of things. It generates a lot of noise to us as well as everybody.
Like the west side on Pepperloaf?
West side of the actual property? West side of the property, which includes adjacent to Pepperloaf as well as adjacent to the west side of the building.
Right, okay.
Right now that parking is right to the back of the building, plus they can drive in behind the building.
No one really drives behind, and I guess the clarification on that, it's called a lane. You can physically drive through there if you want, but no one really does. It's not technically a thorough lane. Again, a vehicle could drive through there, but it's typically on one side of the garbage can is basically blocking it. And typically cars are parked on the west side, which limits anybody really going in there.
Okay.
That, I guess, clarification, too. One of the issues was raised by M&M Group that we had concerns that we wanted to eliminate the lane. That wasn't really the concern. Our concern was more just general noise associated with people in that general area. Concern has been also raised by a number of the residents with respect to the proposed entrance exit to the site from Pepperlo Crescent, increase in traffic along Rollin Boulevard due to the potential or to the recent residential development in Henley, and the potential issues with development of the new subdivision south on Hearthstone Road. And again, these are not just our concerns. They're concerns that were raised by residents when we went around to discuss this issue in general. Again, Mr. Veach has noted in his reports that in discussion with Public Works Department, the proposed entrance exit will be an improvement to the current situation. This is likely correct, and we're not arguing that. The existing situation is not great. The revised entrance is probably more positive from the logistics of direct ingress and egress to the street. However, we do have the concern that without a more detailed traffic analysis as to what potential volumes of traffic that we can see increasing with this development, whether that whole arrangement in terms of an access point onto Pepperlo is just a hazard to begin with, period, and that access point should be eliminated permanently. Based on the above, we would request that a detailed traffic analysis be undertaken by an independent consultant prior to any final site approval in order to adequately assess the expected traffic volumes and any potential hazards and increase in traffic that may cause to the existing traffic flow along Rollin Boulevard and Pepperloaf Crescent, as well as traffic flow into and out of the subject property. Noise, as mentioned above, noise from the existing operation is a significant concern not only to ourselves, the immediate neighbors, but most of the residents listed on the petition. The issue has definitely worsened since the existing operation closed the service garage and began operating as a partial convenience store. When operating as a fuel sales service center, the majority of the vehicles using the site would shut down upon arrival and start up again upon exiting. There was also very little use of the site by others. With the switch to a partial convenience store, there has been an increase in the number of vehicles idling on site while passengers run into the store for convenience purchases, and a significant increase in the level of noise, loud music, door slamming, vehicle engines, motorbikes, voices. The concern of the residents is that this will now be compounded with a full-scale convenience store operation and a coffee bar restaurant. On this basis, we again request the operation continue to be grandfathered under the C1 zoning designation as a permanent means of controlling the operating hours, restricting development of a sit-down coffee bar restaurant, and controlling the associated noise level. Similar to the conditions placed on lighting that Mr. Veach had in his report, we would request that conditions also be stipulated on the level of allowable noise. We note that under item 97, fuel sales, section 3 of the City of Winnipeg zoning bylaw, screening adequate to buffer adjacent residential uses from noise and light must be installed and maintained along the property lines where the use abuts a residential area. Based on the current concerns regarding existing noise, considerations should be given to conducting a noise study to ensure adequate mitigative measures are implemented. Property values, as noted in Mr. Veach's report, the applicant shall make a 10% dedication payment to the city based on...
I'll just remind you, we've got about 10 minutes or so usually for the presentation, so okay. If there's any more relevant facts that you'd like to put on the table, we'd definitely love to hear them, but I could ask you to conclude or
okay.
General direction anyways.
We're pretty much done. Basically, on that note, the only other issue we have is the variance. We're okay with the variance if that was to go ahead. We do have concerns in terms of the rear lot and the understanding on what that setback should be. We do find it a little strange that on a C1 property that they could virtually build on the property line, yet as a residential development we can't. But we would appreciate at least a 10-foot setback would be considered reasonable on that basis. Just in conclusion, we ask Community Council to support the signed petition as submitted and deny the approval for the application for rezoning from of the 5198 Rollin property from C1 to C2. We request that any proposed redevelopment of the site be based on the current C1 zoning requirements, accepting any necessary conditional approvals to allow continued grandfathering of the historical fuel sales on the site. However, we request that conditional approval be subject to the C1 zoning retail sale hours of 9 p.m., the findings of a detailed traffic study, and maintain acceptable noise levels off the property boundaries, and not permitting the use of the site for coffee bar restaurant.
Thank you for your presentation. Any questions, Councillor Clement?
Yeah, I've got a few things I want to do.
All right.
Under current situation, the
C2, they can be, they can have a zero lot. They don't have one, but they could have one.
C1.
No, C1 is...
C1 allows them zero, C2, they have to have a 25-foot setback.
But they have C2 right now.
No, C1.
Or C1, I'm sorry, I'm getting them backwards. It seems to me that C1 should be less, or more, or C2 should be less restrictive than one. So under what they have right now, they could have a zero lot going to the change in zone. Supposedly have to have 25, but 10 is better than zero. So I that's why I raised that earlier on, so they didn't know. I hadn't seen this, of course. But you had done a little bit of homework, and that's good. That setback at 10 feet isn't bothering me a whole bunch because it seems to be a reasonable compromise between the two things. When I get into some of your other comments here about got it, the further increase the allowable size of the structure. You were doing this in meters. I don't think in meters. James, what's the size of the existing building? Do you know?
I have to look at my notes.
The existing one is 2,100 square feet.
Yeah, 2,180.
They want to go to 2,400 square feet.
So they want to add 200 square feet.
And the site is 19,000 square feet, not square meters, as indicated in Larry's.
Okay,
you just got square
yes.
meters mixed up with square feet.
Okay, all right, that's okay. I just can't think clearly in meters. I'm too old. I have to deal with Celsius, so I managed to get through with that one. That's not a huge change, a couple hundred feet, but it is what it is, I guess. The operations is covered. The hours of operation is covered in here already. And just so you know, before you said anything, I had already written down that he's got an F in here, I've got a G. I added assisted living facilities, no group, and then I changed it to no group living categories, period. Because there's a couple of those. And these people are here looking for something very specific, but I'm a businessman. I understand how people think. And, once they have the other zoning, they could flip it. They don't have to. I can tell you they'd have a hell of a time getting anything developed there because I tried to buy a station site, and even if I signed my life away on the environmental issues associated with leaking fuel and that kind of thing, the government won't let you do that now. It's very, very difficult for this to become something other than a service station or a gas bar. It might have to sit there for years and years and years, growing weeds like the one on the corner of Grant and Waverly has been. That's been there for, I'll bet you it's been sitting like that for 20 years now, with nothing there except pipes coming out of the ground to let the methane gas out. So the chances of it being flipped are pretty minimal. Nobody's going to want to buy it and sit on it for two or three decades before they can build something.
Well, I beg to differ on that. That is my background. I am an environmental engineer, so we do routinely flip buildings and properties. So
I tried to buy one in the village, and it went nowhere quick. And Petro-Canada was willing to sell it to me. And the only way that it could happen was they had to do all of the environmental mitigation right now. And even if I signed off on it, it would not. So they may do it somewhere. I don't think the chances are very good of that happening.
Yeah, it's hit or miss. So.
Based on what I've seen nearby, the traffic. I got to tell you, I don't know who this other group is this is transportation engineers manual or wherever they're from, but I know that. Just about every time we've looked at a development, whether it's in Charles or Tuxedo or White Ridge or anywhere else for that matter, because I've been involved in a lot of applications, we've been using the number 10 trips a day for homes for an awful long time.
Yeah, well, that's the number they're used to.
It's very close.
This is their manual that the city uses. So.
Well, yeah, but they got different numbers. They came up with 1,050 trips per day, not 750.
Well, they no, what she did was she said 10 trips per day per dwelling, yeah. Assuming 150 dwellings are using that road, is how they get 1,500 trips.
And I don't know exactly which home she included, but I mean, common sense tells me that you've got to include all the little streets off of there, including Robin.
She did, and that's what that was included in there.
I don't know whether she threw in Vansco and Miramar at all in that mix. She may or may not have, or maybe some of them.
She didn't do Vansco, no.
She didn't.
She did Romdale and O'Hill. And
because to me, I mean, I know people who live on Vansco, I know all kinds of people who live in Miramar. Miramar might tend to use Hearthstone a little more than it might use Pepperlook, but Vansco certainly is going to go down there. But those numbers, when I knew the community club and I read that, I don't see any future, some mention here of this Hearthstone stuff. Well, there may be some travel down Hearthstone Road if there is similar building that takes place, but the intent of trying to create a plan, which is taking a long time, is to create a new east-west road south of the Hart Trail, all the way from Westdale across to the extension of the parkway to eliminate that traffic, because those granular roads can't take it. There isn't even any access from down there to Pepperloaf, but I know there will be. I said that before even this was in here. But there's no question that some of those cars are going to creep down Hearthstone, and they're going to come down a piece of Pepperloaf because that community club is there, and that's going to service some of those.
Yeah, the concern raised by residents would be if people are living down in that area, happen to go down Hearthstone to then go down and zigzag down to Pepperloaf to now go to the convenience center to either get gas or to go to the coffee bar, that now we're going to see potential increase in traffic, and that's a concern residents are raising.
I find it hard to believe they're going to head there personally. I mean, I've just done this a while, and I mean, I look at what took place even with the Tim Hortons, and the Tim Hortons is lined up deep every morning, and there hasn't really been much of a change in Loxdal or Haney. Most of that traffic is funneling from those streets, but there hasn't. They were already funneling down there, so it's just difficult to tie that together. Another little thing, it says pretty definitive it would reduce the value of nearby residential properties. Just so you know, we hear that all the time, just about every time there's an application. It's just not factual. It never ever bears fruit. It's no different than a few years ago. I had somebody who wanted to build a strip mall on Robin Boulevard near the Charles Road, and I wouldn't let them. And he said, well, nobody will buy lots there. Well, he put the land up for sale, and a guy did, built six houses. They're worth over $400,000 each now. I won't live in one, I can tell you. It's just not where I want to live. But you know what? Every time somebody puts one of those houses there, somebody buys it. So there are people that do want to live there for whatever reason. It's just not something that everybody throws that in, but it's not something that bears fruit there. The other thing that I have written down here, just so you know, is under F, no amusement enterprises indoor or outdoor. I have that written down. So dovetails with what you're talking about. There certainly won't be any mobile signs allowed if there was a change. We're talking about traffic now. I don't know how. I understand your issue about loud and noise. I don't know how you can deal with that. They have a machine that can create a noise level, but the problem is that the noise isn't coming from the business specifically. The noise is coming from these young people who have their bass turned up about 65 times and are going to be deaf when they're 45. Probably. We run out of them on red lights all the time. I'm sure you do and I do. But I don't know how you can legislate somebody drives up and leaves a vehicle running while they
if they can do it right now, I guess is my point. And they are, because I know it bothers you. That's one of the things that came up in the discussion with your wife. And I don't know, well, I guess if it, even if there was a sign, shut your motor off, I don't know that anybody can make anybody do that. That's a tough one anyway, is the bottom line. And, but it's not, the business itself isn't going to have a loudspeaker out there.
Well, the concern, I guess, is if you increase the amount of traffic that's coming to that facility, you now increase the noise.
I appreciate that.
So
that's a different argument, but I don't know how you.
But I also, I guess, raise the question from the planning perspective. It's in the bylaws. Like, how do they mitigate against noise? Like, they're obliged to mitigate against noise.
Well, they're obliged to mitigate against it, but it's meant to be
their noise,
the business, their noise, not the visitor's noise. That's the conundrum that we're in on that one. But I don't disagree with it. I know what it's like when those guys come up. Or gals, I guess, is the other one that is driven by a female, too. Just trying to make sure. You know, this is the only time to come up. There was, I didn't get all the way through these, but there's one or two more things that I don't think should be there. While Larry's still at the table, James, I'm curious about something because it's where my head's been all along on this. This land was created as a service station during the Municipality Trails time frame. And we had several bylaws. I can remember sitting in meetings where we had a bylaw and Charles and Bill Neville would have the same situation happening in River Heights and be quoting a different bylaw. One of them was 16502, I remember that. I don't know whether that was his or mine, but I remember the bylaw. And over time, as we're adjusting things to Plan Winnipeg and trying to make one city out of all these bylaws, which I have some minor problems with, as you know, because I don't think that each area of the city is the same. Roman Boulevard is a regional street. It sure as hell isn't Regent Avenue or Pemina Highway. And yet it gets all the same considerations all the time. So it's our removal and that kind of thing. 85 to 90% of Roman Boulevard is residential. And Regent isn't and Pemina isn't. And which is why it's interesting here, by the way, that because this is a rezoning, the variances are here. If they applied for variances outside of a rezoning, they're heard by the Board of Adjustment because the provincial government was of the view that councillors were making decisions that were too parochial. Okay? And I can tell you when it goes to the Board of Adjustment, they're anything but parochial, most of the decisions. So it's a little bit of scary turf there, too, just so you know how it works. But we have no control over the Board of Adjustment. And we hear no variances anymore. We used to hear them at this table. Now we only hear them when they're coming with a rezoning. And in fact, we can sit here and do a rezoning and a variance, and 3 months later they can apply for a different variance. And then it still goes to the Board of Adjustment, which I disagree with too. And I think any variance that's associated with a property that's been rezoned, at least for a time frame, should have to come back here. But that's not the way it is right now. And I'm a committee of one, that I'm aware of. So I'm a little nervous about that part, just so you understand that. Anyway, where I was heading with this, James, is I'm curious, and I understand how the applicant comes in, they want to try and deal with something, and the planning department is trying to, and no disrespect to the planning department or yourself, that's not where I'm going with this, are trying to make it as cookie cutter as they can because the bylaws are trying to become uniform, and I understand that. That aside, why couldn't we leave the zoning at the zoning it's at now and deal with this through conditional uses?
You can't add a use to a zone for longer than a 5-year period. Before, you used to be able to add a use like fuel sales to C1 for a period to be determined by the community committee. and you could have done it that way years ago, but the Winnipeg Charter now says you can only add a use for a maximum period of 5 years. So in order to deal with this, because they're non-conforming, they can remain there. But the minute they want to expand or change, they have to conform now with the bylaw, and C1 doesn't allow fuel sales. So any change requires them to rezone. You can't add a use anymore.
But they could take the existing site, they could leave their gas where it is, as an example, and they could still adjust that building to do these other things that they want to do under the existing zoning.
It would be a change in the structure, and I think the bylaw, it wouldn't allow that either. Changing the structure, a non-conforming structure and use. So it's a gas bar.
They already have a gas bar and a convenience store.
Yeah.
But they don't have a restaurant.
No.
But there's nothing stopping the convenience store from selling coffee and having a chair to sit on, probably.
Right.
Right. So they could take the existing building the way it sits. They could spruce it up because they might want it to look different than it does now. Not that there's anything wrong with it now, but you know, they might want to do something with that. And they might want to take that storage area and use it more for convenience store than what they are. I believe that they could do that quite right now.
I think it talks about aesthetic changes and interior changes versus actual structural expansion. So there could be some limited changes they could do there, like you're talking about. But
I mean, they're all internal, so they're not bothering anybody.
Yeah, I'm not an expert with the zoning bylaw, especially since it's so new, but I know that you can't physically make the structure bigger or remove the structure. You may be able to do some aesthetic changes.
Larry, I can't think of anything else to ask you right now, unless there's something that just spilled out of that conversation that you might want to say something about.
Well, it's just unfortunate that they can't, like, it's already been operating in that fashion, but I think everybody would be agreeable to it being rebuilt under the existing arrangement, I guess.
Yeah, I know.
And used, and the fact it is classified as fuel sales and convenience use. So, but
yeah, it's been there a long time. I don't know how long it's been there, but it's been there since
40 years anyway.
43, I think they said.
Yeah, there was a grocery store on the corner when I was
48.
A kid. Yeah, that. So it would have been.
It started as a grocery store and then went to fuel sales.
Yeah, it was Weir's grocery store, and it was there until about, I'm guessing, 56, 57, something like that. And the Kendall would have opened that service station. Somewhere around there. It's at least, it's 50 years.
50 years. Any other questions, councilors?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Kathy, did you want to add anything to your husband?
Well, he's very thorough. I still have to go up there?
If you want, you can just say register your opposition as well.
If you want to speak, you're supposed to go up there.
I guess the biggest concern I've got is I'm worried that, like we say, yes to this, and then...
Sit down and relax. We're not going to bite. It's just an easy conversation.
Yeah, well, it's not that easy for me. I'm kind of emotionally wrapped up in this. This has been a big part of my life for the last couple of weeks. And I have talked to a lot of the neighbors, and I have gotten a feel for where they are. And I know that every one of them is very unhappy with the noise and the state of the site now. Like, you think, oh, let's have a nice new site. You think we'd all be happy, but we're very nervous. We're not feeling like the service station has kept it nice for us for the last 15 years, and I don't see this as, you know, I just don't have the faith that it's going to be kept nice for us, that we're going to be concerned when it comes to the noise level and the amount of traffic that goes in there. And I guess the other major concern I've got is down the road, if they decide they want to go 24 hours, they're going to slip in a quiet meeting. It's going to be 24 hours like that, or, you know.
Well, they
people are busy. It's hard to get people
to come out to even you go and you say this is happening, you know, and people, oh yeah, I'm very concerned, and then it's hard to get people here registering their concern, like I found when I was walking down the street talking to them. So 2 years from now you tell me they're going to go for 24 hours or their coffee bar, which is now 14 seats, you know. Like, how do we control that from escalating? I guess that's my...
Well, what happens is the Board of Adjustment, when there's a variance being held, I read those. I get that in my office every week. We don't go to Board of Adjustment meetings because there's the legal rules around appearing there make it difficult if it ever winds up back here at an appeal. And we kind of avoid going to those meetings. But what I typically do, if there is an issue that I don't think is appropriate like that, then I file a letter with the Board of Adjustment. I'm starting to get convinced that they don't read them very often, but anyway, they kind of just do what they want. But what that does is it allows for an appeal to be created within 14 days of the Board of Adjustment hearing. And the appeal meeting is a new meeting, which means anybody can go. Like, if I filed an appeal to that type of an issue, then once I file it and there's going to be a hearing, then I can contact people and then people can go to that meeting and they can register to speak. That's how it would play out if that happened. Unfortunately, and I don't agree with it either, well, mind you, they do have to post signs. The problem is that lots of times people drive by the post office and read them. But they can't have a meeting at the Board of Adjustment without posting signs on the Pepperleaf side and on the Robin Boulevard side. So if anybody drove by and saw a yellow card, that's your trigger that something's being applied for.
I think they have increased the size from the new zoning bylaw that's there, so they're pretty big and pretty hard to miss it. The signs.
That's how it gets triggered, Kathy.
13 or so years ago, I don't know, somehow they slipped in. I was busy maybe with a newborn baby. They changed the tanks. They put up the great big huge things over the bays. The light went up 100%. We weren't even aware of that happening. It's just the whole awareness of it. So we give them the C2 and then... It's just going to get slipped in. That's my big concern, I guess.
Yeah, when that happened, that didn't require variance meetings, I don't believe, because I don't think the bylaw was, had been, I don't think it was even, I think we were still dealing with the old bylaw when that happened.
I found some history in 95. They got a variance for the canopy size to be closer to Roblin, but the actual canopy construction, I think, met the bylaws of the day in terms of height and light.
Because it's a considerable eyesore from what it was when we moved in, the canopy.
Well, it used to just be tanks, and then they put a canopy up. But I don't know, I don't recall. Well, the variance didn't happen here. I don't know.
The other thing I'd like to just mention, we've been on that property for 25 years, and 25 years ago, it was a happy, nice place to live. We didn't have complaints. Now it's very noisy, like... Any one of you could come to my house for coffee at a certain time of the day, and I'll let you hear the walls vibrate. And I believe, like, a lot of the nature of the noise is related to the business, because it's the employees of the business getting picked up, socializing, meeting with their friends. So in a way, it is business-related. It's not so much just people walking off the street getting... their lottery tickets or gas or whatever.
Well, I know it happens because I went and I sat there one night for an hour and I read the paper and left my window open. And I only had two vehicles that were what I would consider to be out of touch with reality. But
that can change on a given night, depending on who feels like stopping. But that was, so I know that what you're saying is accurate. The other problem with this situation, of course, we have new owners. Nobody knows how they're going to operate in comparison to the old ones. I don't think ESSO has been looking at doing something corporately for a long time. Moving their stations or doing something with them. So now we've got different owners. I used to think they bought them all, but I don't really know that nothing happened. And whatever ESSO didn't do, they're wearing right now in your comments, and you're sitting here listening to them. And I know they're going to address that when they come back, and they're going to tell us what great corporate citizens they are, and they may well be. But it's a crapshoot. They know that. We know that. I don't know how you deal with it. You can't prove anything one way or the other with that one, you know, in fairness to them.
Anyhow. The other thing, the other main point to me is the fact, if any of you've been in that service station, for what it has for convenience, is way less than what I think they're proposing. I still think that's a major point. We don't know what their increased, whatever they're going to do, is going to do to that area in terms of traffic.
Yeah, the only thing that, I suspect that they believe it's going to go up, or they wouldn't be looking at it. And people don't usually do these things unless they've done some kind of market analysis. I know Wendy's and Burger King and places like that don't build restaurants unless they know they're going to sell burgers. They figure that out before they build. I don't know, unless a whole bunch of people in the Roblin Park catchment area change what they do a whole bunch. I don't know where the cars are going to come from other than on Roblin Boulevard, because it would have to be local people that would be making those trips. I have a father-in-law, a mother-in-law, live on Donnell Lane. I know he goes down and gets the paper every day at the convenience store. I know that he does, for bread and milk and that kind of stuff. He doesn't like driving to many places. So people do that now from in there. Whether they will go more often because there's a better variety, probably the answer is yes. Will that change those numbers enough on Pepperlo to make a big adjustment? Probably not. I suspect that most of that traffic would come from on Roblin Boulevard, but there's no way to prove it. That's the difficulty. Anyhow.
Any other questions, councillors?
No, I'm just kind of reacting to what Kathy's saying a little
bit. I'll just make a comment on ESSO, and I know because in my own ward I've had 4 different ESSO stations close, and you've had one in yours. ESSO doesn't want to be in the retail business. So anything's better than ESSO at this point. And
I'll speak to that later.
For sure.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks very much.
Okay, next person.
I thought you did okay, by the way.
Jeff Brute, is that right? Is there a Jeff Brute here? Britt?
My name is Brett.
I haven't got very much to say. I already just about covered it 10 times over. But as you can tell, I'm retired. My wife and I live just up a little stretch from Roblin Boulevard, just past, what's the name of that street there? Glenbush? No. Anyway, Roblin Hill. So we're just a few hundred feet from the corner. I've always been bothered by that side entrance on Pepperwolf Street. I don't think in any other part of town it would be allowed. Myself, I haven't had any fender benders over the last 36 some odd years, but come damn close to it. I've seen other people come close to it, where the traffic coming from the west side of Roblin cuts into that side onto that lot without stopping or without looking. Some people just don't give a damn.
And it's blind to them.
So that's always been a kind of a a thing that has always bothered me, not so much for my own safety, but for the safety of people that do a lot of walking or kids that are coming back from school or going to school. That's one of the things. The other thing is the traffic that's on Pepperloaf now seems to be getting a little bit heavier, and I can understand that. I was in the car business for many years, and I've never seen so many damn cars on the road, or trucks, big trucks, 300 series pickups, and this sort of thing. All I can see is a heavier dose of traffic on Pepperloaf as a result of having something going 24 hours a day. And my concern is somebody's going to get it. Some youngster, some 8-year-old kid coming home from school is going to get it one of these days.
The first issue that you raised in this drawing, I don't know if you've seen this drawing or not, but the west entrance onto Pepperloaf is moved about 70 feet down the street. And I'm familiar with what you're talking about. I've had it happen to me. I'm on Pepperloaf probably twice a week minimum, partly because I drive most of the streets once a week, and partly because my in-laws live there, and we're there at least every Sunday, sometimes more often than that because they're elderly. But I've had it happen to me too, because I know you're right, cars come down Robbins Boulevard from the west, and even though there's an entranceway another 20 feet down Robbins past the intersection to drive right in, they cut that corner and go right in. And they don't look, and they can't see anybody because of the trees and the garage on the, from the property in the corner. And if somebody's just pulling into that stop sign, they get bad. So moving that further south is better than where it is. I guess eliminating it would be better. I don't know that that's going to solve a lot, though, because there will be people in this situation who live on Pepperloaf and other streets who are going to want to go down there, and if you close it, then you're forcing them to go over to Hearthstone and make a U-turn to come back, because there's no other way to do it. And I would submit to you that that's more dangerous than leaving this, or at least what it being moved. You know? So it solves what you're talking about. The other part, and I'm actually happy about the traffic report where it talks about speed, because I think they said the average speed was 43.7 or something.
53.
No, it's 43.
Yeah, that's another component of contention, because I think they had the equipment crossing the road too close to Roblin. So traffic coming off Roblin would be at a lower speed rate, and traffic coming from the south toward Roblin would be slowing down as they're coming up to that corner. They should have had those cords somewhere between Robindale and the community club, probably closer to the community club, because that's where they seem to speed up. People see these corners, they don't see around them, they see the corner, but they're coming up there at 65, 70 kilometers, both directions. We've seen that happen and heard it happen at all hours of the day.
We actually had radar there one day last year, and they did catch some people going over the speed limit. The unfortunate thing I have to share with you is that everybody we caught lived in the area. They weren't transient traffic, in other words. What you do with that?
Yeah.
We had a lot of trouble with the grid streets, more so than a street like Pepperloaf. And I'm lucky to live on a street that, because it doesn't go right through to Grant and Robin, and we don't get the same. We get some, but it's more usually from somebody down the street. But streets like Harstown, Community, Buckingham, Oakdale, those kinds of streets tend to have traffic going a little faster than it should. There's a long distance between stop signs. And if you try to stick three-way stops in, they become more dangerous for kids. We stuck one of those in on Hunter's Point, and it was worse than not having it there.
Yeah.
Because the kids think that they can go across, and sometimes the people can't even see the stop sign of the trees. But I appreciate your comments, because I believe what you're saying is particularly on the first one, is bang on. The second one, is, I don't know how we prove it one way or the other. I think any increase is going to have to come from people making extra trips. I don't see people, if somebody was on Community as an example, or I don't see them using Ranoff to come to Pepperloaf to come over because they're going to stop and get a loaf of bread or something from a convenience store, that when they can go straight down the Community, yeah, to Roblin, come up to Roblin and do the same thing. So it doesn't make any sense to me. I've dealt with these issues for a long time. But I think that it's fair to suggest that people who live in the Roblin Park Catchment area would go there more often if the opportunities, yeah, within the convenience store were greater.
I see maybe a slight a problem with the people that are living closer to Roblin on both sides of Pepperloaf having cars parked, well, I suppose on the west side, from there up to the community club, if this development is successful. Like, yeah, if they're running it 24 hours a day, they've got a difficulty there in having a parking area, I would think.
Well, I know we used to have a bigger issue with that a few years ago. A lot of it was Royal Bank employees. We actually, over in the old municipal offices where the Historical Society has a museum now and the seniors operate from, there's a huge gravel parking area, and we made it available at pretty reasonable rates. And there are four or five people from the Royal Bank that are paying to park there during the day. But I saw somebody the other day get out of the car, and I saw them, and I recognized who they were. So I know there's still the odd one that doesn't want to pay anything, and that's where they're parking.
Yeah.
We can eliminate the parking, but that becomes a detriment to the people who live there. If they want to have people over, then they got nowhere to park.
Yeah.
And, so it's not, but that's a personal choice thing. If people in that general area want to see some of that parking removed, we can do that. That's an easy one. You don't have to do it. But the thing is that. And it would be, it can be done during the daytime. So there's evening parking. There's ways to do that. Pardon me? You all over there? Could be that, too.
Yeah.
There's issues like that we can deal with in a positive way. That might be helpful.
There used to be signs out there saying that's happening.
Yeah. I know that there was a sign that there was no parking for the first 50 feet. I remember that. They seem to disappear. It drives me crazy. You just can't. I don't keep them in my trunk.
One good thing about Pepperloaf is that you've got no curbs. You can be a good thing for the people that are parking, because you can move the damn car over. You can have the right, if you're heading south, you can have the right two wheels on your car halfway in the ditch if you want.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of room then for people are coming from the south and somebody's heading south, there's plenty of space between the car that's parked and the one that's coming at them. But if you miss the, if you're a little too far in the ditch, that's where you're going to end up, either side.
And in wintertime, the windrows don't give you about the same width.
Yeah.
You have to, the way to do it would be to deal with the parking in some fashion, and that's not something. In fact, given where this is being designed, if this was moved ahead, then it would probably be a good idea to remove it. up to there, maybe beyond a little bit. But once again, the people who live there have to be in favor of that. Anyway, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate you coming down.
Last person to speak, unless there's anyone else, is Steve. How do you pronounce your last name?
My name is Steve Kunk. I live at 519 Pepperloaf Crescent, which is one house over from Larry and Kathy, so I'm the next-door neighbor to the SO right now. A lot of those comments that were mentioned earlier about some of the positive stuff, some of those were mine. From the original plan that they came up with to what they came up to today, that they did actually do a lot of improvements to the layout and stuff. Some of the other comments I just want to make, though, is with regards to the zoning from C1 to C2. And just listening today for the last hour and stuff, some of the stuff that really started to sort of bother me was we were listening to if this rezoning is approved from C1 to C2, then it's a matter of what happens with the facility in the future. I've also listened to Mr. McClent, Bill McClent.
Clement.
With that, I know, you see SOs all over the place that don't resell, but we could be the one that does resell. So that is a concern of mine. If it was rezoned, the potential of hours, I do believe there was a condition of the hours that was maybe in the application. I was reading in the notes here. That sounds like something that could be possibly changed in a variance. I also heard the terms court of adjustment. And if it gets to that point, then it's actually, it sounds like to me it was approved, and then we have to appeal it in the end. And I think what I'm just trying to state is that if we leave it the way we are, at least then we don't have to go through that. The hours of operation, the way they are now, we're quite fine with it, and I would just like to make sure they're kept that way. One of my biggest concerns is the proposed coffee bar. What is a proposed coffee bar? I'm not sure if the SO actually sells coffee right now. I know I tried it a few years ago, and if they actually, the coffee was a little different in there, the traffic would be a lot greater. No disrespect to the SO, but that is one of my concerns, is that a proposed coffee site is just way too open-ended for me, not knowing what that means. My final two comments were with regards to the driveway, and I've listened to the driveway on Pepperloaf. One of my comments was, well, don't even have a driveway there. And that's kind of selfish because of me. I'm two streets over or two houses over. I can walk to the SO. I don't need the driveway. I understand why it's needed there, but I still am opposed to where they want to put the driveway. And I do understand the traffic flow and how dangerous it is now. My final comment is, I'll speak for myself, I am quite pleased with the attempt to improve the facility. I'm a little, I don't understand why they just couldn't renovate, keep the zoning the way it is, and within the structure the way it is to be able to, half the building is used right now and half is not used. If they do want to improve the facility the way it is, redo the structure, like it or not, maybe add some sort of a little convenience side inside the store, but leave the zoning the way it is. That's all I have.
Any questions, Councillor Clement or Councillor
Merwin? No, I mean, all of the things that Steve is talking about, the things we've already chatted about, and it's getting clarity. If you'd like to see the west side closed, which has been raised before as an issue, and I'll say to you, I appreciate that because you're where you are, mm-hmm. It doesn't make a difference. But area and probably create more problems than it's going to solve. They're not going to turn down Hearthstone and go back up to Rannoch and come back in that way. They're going to make a U-turn at Hearthstone and go back.
And go to Shell down the street.
Well, they can do that too.
Now that's me, eh?
I appreciate that. One of the things that hasn't come up here, and I'll do it well because it's the last one, lighting. On-site lighting. I'm assuming there is some. The canopy would be lit, obviously, until 10 o'clock. Are there other lights? like fulcrum lights?
Actually, I could partially comment on that. In the building they have right now, there's a very large halogen in the back of the property now, which completely lights the lights in the area. So.
Yeah. Well, the proposed lighting, we've gotten a lighting plan, and it shows there would be lighting on the canopy underneath, flush. There's some new regulations now about no spill, no glare requirements. Pioneer has gone above and beyond that, and they're setting them flush in the bottom of the canopy so they shine straight down. One of the conditions was no lighting on the face of the canopy, on the southern face of the canopy, so that can't be lit. The proposed building would have, in the proposed lighting plan, had four wall lights, two on each side, on the east side and west side. The lighting numbers that they gave us, we asked if they could reduce those lighting numbers, and Pioneer is going to submit a new lighting plan, and it's part of the plan approval that will come back if that's the way the conditions, if this project is approved and there is plan approval, lighting will be one of the drawings that we would review, and it shows the actual foot candles that are produced at the edges of the property, and we have guidelines where typical jurisdictions require it to residential property a 0.1 foot candles at the property line.
Well, we still have somebody here because they only get one kick at this. I want to come back to what we talked about a little while ago. If the zoning was left the way that it is, we could deal with the access and egress on the west side without there being a zoning change. That could be done anytime, frankly. We certainly don't have any problem under the existing zoning removing the propane tanks or putting a garbage enclosure where they've got it. They already have 8 pumps, I guess I'll call them, on site. All they're talking about doing is changing the direction of them. They're not adding any pumps. They're not deleting any pumps. I'm having trouble understanding how the zoning plays into that. The only issue, James, seems to be about any redevelopment of the store. The only difficulty, of course, is that I don't know how many feet are behind that store. Like, this shows 10 feet in this drawing. I don't know what's there right now. It's probably a little wider than that, about 50. And that would make it a little tight to put to change the positioning of the pumps, because that 5 feet doesn't leave very much room. Might make it, but I'm not sure what the front, but what the setback is on that one tank. But I mean, other than trying to get it to conform with a zoning change that happened after this was already built, and getting it to conform, and they're doing everything the way that they're supposed to be doing it, I'm having difficulty understanding why we couldn't make that work. I heard what you said before. I just had another half hour to think about it. And I just failed to see why we have to rezone it to do these things. And I'm not expecting you to necessarily come up with a clue, you know, and be clairvoyant all of a sudden. Seems to me that there's really not a lot going on here that forces it to become a zoning change, other than it would conform.
Well, I'm reading the non-conforming section of the bylaw, and it talks about that repairs and incidental alterations can be made to non-conforming structure expansion of a non-conforming structure. It's all here in the bylaw, but what I would recommend instead of trying to interpret this is if you want it, you could adjourn it until the next community committee, and the applicant and their consultants could talk to zoning, the experts on this bylaw, and say, can we do what we need to do, alterations to non-conforming use as far as the bylaw goes, and see if they can do what they want to do, and then come back and say, we want to do this, this is what's allowed, we want to rezone it because we can't achieve what our end goals are. I wouldn't want to start to try guess on this stuff because it is very detailed and it's all legal.
Well, that's why I said I wasn't expecting to be clairvoyant. I'm halfway down that path in my head right now. But I just can't.
And maybe when they come back and on their rebuttal, they can speak to that as well.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And they will have that opportunity. I just wanted before, since Steve's the last guy up here, so once he leaves the table, we're in a different section. Anyway, okay. That's a fair comment. I appreciate your comments.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we'll call back the appellant, or rather the applicant.
Before you start, I'm assuming that when you approached the planning department or the permit department, that they likely suggested that you should speak with a planner, and the planner likely, based on what he's got to interpret, suggested that you apply for zoning change. Is that fair?
We first spoke with the zoning officer. Zoning officer will sit down with us and go over the site plan, and from there it was determined that we had to go to a C2 zoning because under the new bylaw it wasn't permitted to redevelop the site and keep it under the old zoning. That was the problem.
Yeah. Just to further on that comment about redeveloping, Imperial Oil, in their wisdom, when they sell a property, they will remove the tanks, they remove the lines, and they will clean it up because they don't want to have any issues down the road, as you mentioned earlier. Back in 1995, I think Kathy mentioned when new tanks went in, they were previously where the parking is right now on the west end of the property.
Yes, they were.
Back in those days, and the word environmental may not have been administered properly because it just wasn't a big thing, you know, 15 years ago, 13 years ago. Imperial Oil is under the impression that they're going to have to take the building down, pull the tanks, but also remove the camp, which hence is, for us, is a brand new development.
And that's
triggers the rezoning.
And that's what triggers the rezoning.
Yeah.
And who's telling them they have to take them down?
The environmentals. When they went in 2 years ago, when they decided to divest themselves of certain areas, they went around and tested all the properties and determine what level they were at. For instance, Taylor in Cambridge, we just went in. That was a site that was purchased from Imperial Oil by Pioneer. They removed the tanks and the lines because the only contamination they found was directly in the tank farm. There was nothing up against the building, so the building stayed.
Yeah. But who are making those?
Well, Imperial Oil will with their environmental consultants at the time, when they decide to go in. But based on the original findings they have, that they're suspecting there's going to be contaminant around the footings of the building, and it'll be gone.
So it's their corporate policy?
Yes. They did soil samples, determined that there is basically leakage all over the site, and they will not sell the site until they fully remediate it, and in order to do that, they've determined that they must remove the building, and so it cannot be, I guess, redeveloped. It cannot just be renovated inside. It has to be removed to properly remediate the site to their standards before they'll sell it.
And they're trying to satisfy who?
Themselves for future legal.
Imperial Oil.
Legal, but are they federal?
If they're saying it? future contamination down the road. They will not sell the property unless it has a clean bill of health.
That's their internal policy, is my understanding.
Yeah, forget them for a second.
Yeah.
Whose regulations are
the MOE?
Which?
The Ministry of the Environment.
Provincially or federally?
I'm sorry?
Is that provincial or federal if that's making that regulation?
In Ontario, it's provincial.
Yeah, there isn't a provincial requirement.
Pardon?
There isn't a provincial requirement.
Not here. No, but there is something, so that's why
I'm asking. Yeah, I'm sure there is something. I mean, it's just, as you said earlier, you couldn't buy that piece of property because...
I tried, huh?
Yeah, you're signing your life away and every which way from loose. And if you look around the areas, and not just in Winnipeg, all over, there's a lot of vacant properties that were gasoline stations that...
Well, Petro-Canada moved their corporate offices in the building I'm talking about, okay, on Robin Boulevard, but that's how they got around it.
But that's just protecting their own...
Yeah, and I got no problem with that, it's not a city. I'm just trying to draw out of it. It's not a city requirement that they do that.
No.
It's their own internal.
But I believe there is something either federally or provincially that makes them... Just go down that path.
Just to go further on down with Imperial Oil, as you brought it up, there's been four or five sites closed.
On Portage Avenue.
Yeah. When we came to, what's happened is Imperial Oil has decided to get out of the retail market in certain areas of the country. Winnipeg being one, Manitoba being one, Northern Ontario, Eastern Northern Ontario, all of BC, excluding Vancouver. They just want out of the retail side of things. They want to become just a wholesaler of fuel. So they've contacted a few individuals, Pioneer being one of them. And we manage all their sites in Northern Ontario. We bought five sites in Sudbury, Timmins, and North Bay from them with an agreement in place. They're going to buy their fuel for 10 years. That's how they're getting their volume back at the refinery. So we're making a substantial investment into those sites to maintain and keep them running. The same thing applies here in Winnipeg. We came out here 2.5-3 years ago, assessed all the sites, because we were the chosen one for Manitoba. And at the end of the day, we felt there's only 9 sites that could fit our economic criteria to make some money. And hence, that's why some of these sites are being closed. And they're not done yet. Strangely enough, some of the sites that they invested in probably 10 years ago, some of the newer sites on large properties, we don't want them. And Imperial Oil is going to just walk away from the leases. Our friends at Shindigo probably may not be that happy on one of them, but that's just the way it is. So we turned around and did our market study, and we felt that these 9 sites that were left were all had money-making potential, and Robin Pepperdell being one. Given the fact that, yes, we're buying a piece of property which is going to be bare, assuming the building's gone, the canopy's gone, and nothing else be left other than the dirt itself. We were hoping the building was going to be left. But then once we got into the building and looked at it, well, that building is 40 years old. And yes, there has been service bays in there. There's the hoister still there. The remediation, not the right word, the renovation for that building was almost just as much to build a new one to meet our needs of today, not to mention aesthetically and everything else. And without slandering Imperial Oil, they have spent no money in this market in the last 5 years because they've known they're washing their hands of certain areas. We went through this in Timmins, went through it in Sudbury, North Bay, and we've gone through here. Like that site, unfortunately, is a derelict site. It's been run down, and everybody knows, other than the odd coat of paint, there's been nothing spent. That's exactly the way Imperial Oil ran things for the last little while. And I don't mean to slander them, but that's... a fact of life. What we're trying to do is come back and purchase the property, obtain the zoning, to build a site, which is going to be obviously new, it's going to be environmentally friendly, and move forward with things. That's our focus right now. Now, there's comments that have been made previously that somebody from Ontario is coming in doing all this work. We're investing almost $15 million into Winnipeg. We have 3 full-time managers in the area looking after things now, not to mention the 100 and some odd staff that are employed. So it's not like we're a flash to pan here today, gone tomorrow. We're in this for the long run.
Are you already running this station?
As of May the 20th, we're leasing it from Imperial Oil because they don't have any bodies left in town.
Okay.
their one district manager now, who was in charge of Winnipeg proper, is now looking after Saskatchewan until they find what they call an RBD, a retail branded distributor, to look after that territory. And after that, his job is obsolete. Another good example is Notre Dame and McCulloch. That site is vacant. They went in, they cleaned it right out, with the exception of the car wash building, because there was no contam over there. And we're in the middle of the building permit, so hopefully going in next week we can rebuild out.
By the way, James, there's no clause in here anywhere that gives the local councilor site plan approval on any change or changes.
No, we don't use the term local councilor. We use Assiniboine Community Committee. So it's a committee decision.
But it doesn't say that in here on your end.
Yeah, Assiniboine Community Committee for Planning Approval. Number 9 on the zoning agreement. The end of the rezoning. Right after no.
What page are you on?
My pages are different than yours because you
2.
Therefore, 2 goes to 7. Yeah.
Roman numeral 9.
Roman numeral 9.
Under public.
Yes. Under the variance? Yes.
Yeah. 1A9.
No. For the development of any building and no accessory
parking area. It's on the second page.
It's under the regional.
Right here, Bill. Can I read it?
Well, okay, here. Hold on. Oh, this one here?
Yeah.
This
one. Yeah.
That's good.
Okay, is there any more questions at all?
I just had a couple of points up just to address some of the issues brought up by the by some of the neighbors. So we've talked about the reason that we actually do need the rezoning from C1 to C2 because the building will be removed. So that was one of the issues. The second thing, the hours, it's going to be written into or assuming this goes ahead, it would be written into the approval that the hours remain the same, and then it would require variance and they would be posted just like this one has been. So it would come to a hearing of the Board of Adjustment again. And then whichever way it got decided. I will say that that's not in the plan at the moment, but it does have to, they do have to apply for that. They can't just slide it in any way.
It would come back here because it would be in the zoning agreement.
Okay.
And it would be a zoning agreement amendment. Any of these conditions would be in the zoning agreement.
Okay.
There's one to the 8A to 8, you mean?
Yes. All of them, even everything under A, all those conditions under A would have to come back to the Assiniboine Community Committee if any of those were to be changed, if this was to be passed.
That's interesting because there's been at least 2 variance applications that have gone to Board of Adjustment, unless it's this being missed internally somehow, that were attached to zoning agreements, which was my comment earlier, that I believe that when variances are heard at a rezoning, that any variance should have to go back to community committee, period.
And that's different. It's not any variance. They could come and ask for variance for a 10-foot fence. It wouldn't come here. But if they wanted to change any of these conditions
that we're putting in,
and it was in a zoning agreement,
to come here.
Sure.
And they're not looking at it. Well, that's better.
Okay.
Could we add a condition that they can't...
You know, map board orders.
It's already in there.
No, I mean, they can't apply for 10 years.
It's the same thing.
Continue on if there's any other...
Okay. In terms of the coffee, there is a small walk-up service today. That would likely be the expanded, but there is walk-up coffee service in the convenience store today. We've already discussed the state of the site in terms of the cleanliness and stuff. Pioneer Petroleum is obviously, they're starting their commitment to Winnipeg, so they would be looking at investing money into upgrading the facility. There's much more landscaping planned for the site. If you go out there now, there's almost basically nothing. There's basically no landscaping at all on site. So this would be a vast improvement. Traffic was brought up numerous times. That is actually what I do. I'm a transportation engineer, and I do traffic studies all the time. I did speak to Public Works regarding this site, specifically to ask them if they required a traffic study along with this redevelopment, and they said no, they did not. They did not feel that the redevelopment would generate a significant amount of additional traffic, and stated to me that a traffic study was not required as part of this. The other issue, the Pepperloaf access, I know it's come up several times about closing that access. I think one of the issues from our perspective is westbound traffic on Roblin. In order to enter the site, they make a left-hand turn onto Pepperloaf and then enter off that Pepperloaf access. If you close that access, they're going to make an awkward U-turn maneuver to try and enter the site off of Roblin, off of the access on Roblin. So that we have some concerns with the actual closure of that access.
If I can comment on that access too, the original layout right now with that driveway so close to the intersection, as we all know and we've discussed it, it becomes like an off-ramp. They take that, hit the gas bar.
They don't slow down.
They don't.
They don't slow down. And the gas pumps today are lined up that way. So guess what? It's a straight shot in. Mm-hmm. Moving a driveway down X number of feet, whatever that works out to, creates them to make a hard 90-degree turn off of Roblin onto Pepperloaf, then a hard 90-degree turn again
on
the lot. And then with the pump layout the way it is now, it forced them to do another 90-degree turn into the pumps, which, in hindsight, I don't have any facts to back this up. If I'm a driver, I'm going to take the easiest route, which is going to be turning in off Roblin.
Yeah, the pumps have been rotated 90 degrees, the alignment of the pumps. So whereas before, I guess, they were kind of aligned east-west, they're now aligned north-south. So it's entering off Roblin Boulevard gives you the easiest access to the new alignment of the pumps.
It'll be like that Petro-Canada grant from Nathaniel.
Yes.
Yeah, they're perpendicular to the street, not parallel
not
to the street.
Right.
That's the difference. Yeah. Yeah.
It's what we call in the industry a dive-in, so they're facing the store.
Yeah. And the final point just that was raised was parking on Pepperloaf. I also spoke to Public Works about that. You had suggested potentially eliminating parking north of the access on the west side of Pepperloaf. And there's two or three residences, I think, that front on that portion of Pepperloaf. And Public Works indicated to me that if those few residents are okay with it, all it would require from them is a letter, and then they would eliminate parking in that portion. So that's something that just those adjacent residents would have to be supportive of. And if they're not, then it stays. But that's all they actually require. So.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
And I think that's
no, not yet.
Oh,
I got a few more things. I just wanted to expand and clarify on a couple of things. City planner mentioned about the lighting study that was done that I submitted, and they mentioned there was four lights on the building that was designed. Now, we did that for a reason, to try to make it brighter back there, to eliminate some of the quote-unquote hangout atmosphere back there. We'll take two of them off, reposition them, and still maintain the 0.1 foot candles at the property line. Now, understanding the property line now has got a wooden fence and the willow trees over top, but we should be able to maintain that 0.1, which will make us legal to all the new quote-unquote bylaws regarding lighting. They're all recessed, and the nice thing about the new lighting we're going to be using on the canopy is they're recessed, but they're also LED lighting, which is a different light. It's a softer light, and we'll be able to be a little more directional with it, so you're not going to get that spillover, which lets us meet the 0.1 foot candles. And because it is recessed, there's no glare factor.
Okay.
The noise factor, we all know there's noise in the site business. We've discussed that. We contemplated putting in a noise privacy fence, but unfortunately that's hard to do because of the trees. And I'm not exactly what you call a tree hugger, but I'm also not going to destroy those trees because they've been there how many years? 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. So we looked at that option, but it's just not feasible because of the existing layout of what's there, and we don't want to destroy any of the natural habitat that's there. So that was not an issue. Kira mentioned about the U-turns, if that driveway was closed, I think that's pretty critical because then you're limiting our traffic only
eastbound.
And what's the westbound customer going to do? Go down that intersection, make a U-turn, which is probably a lot more dangerous than the driveway itself. The other thing about the store itself, just everybody was questioning the size of the store. Yeah, it is a larger convenience store, but you have to understand there's still a back room, probably a third, if not up to a half of that back room right now. The old service space is used for storage for the C-store. So in a sense, it's not getting that much bigger from a C-store perspective. Yeah, there's going to be more floor space. I'm not going to deny it. But there is a lot of the three service bays being used right now for storage, which is critical in a C-store because you have to have back inventory stock, as we all know. The last thing I want to comment on is the C2 zoning. It was referred to as a community.
Do you have a drawing of, do you have an internal drawing?
Not yet. Okay. We haven't gone down that far yet. We have an idea, but it's not etched in stone yet. The C2 zoning is designated as a community service, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so. It's got a bit of a description at the front of the zoning bylaw.
Right. The comment made earlier that it's a residential area. You cannot compare Roblin to Pembina. All the traffic on Roblin is the neighbors, the community. And that's what this site at the end of the day services, is the community around it. It's not a Pembina, yet there was a great analogy there. It doesn't meet that criteria. And that's one reason why we felt this site would be productive for us. From a volume, from a sales, and obviously a profit point of view, that's one of the reasons why we went with this development and tried to go forward with it.
It's called commercial community, is what it's called in the bylaw.
More comments or questions from?
I have one question. Does the current site sell lottery?
Yes.
It does, so yes. Then you'd probably have a lottery depot.
Yeah.
It may be commercial community, but when I look at this book, it was permitted under C2. There's a pile of stuff. And not all of it that would be a problem. What's a P with a star? What's that mean?
You go to the use specific standards in the next column, and there's certain restrictions with that permitted use. So there's
I guess an example, it says daycare, and there's five P's with a star in a row. Actually, there's more than that. There's about eight. And then all of a sudden it says use specific standards 70, parking category 5.
Yeah.
Just as an example.
So you go to 70 under use specific standards.
This is his catalog, that's one, right? We don't have that.
Page 47.
And then goes.
It's okay. I'm just picking one.
Each daycare center must provide a drop off pickup area to ensure safety of the persons. Picking up, not interfere with smooth traffic flow on adjacent public streets. So each star has
a development. This is a very specific issue I want to get.
Just further, Mr. Clement, to what you mentioned about other uses, we do not have any issues of any restrictions being tied to the zoning for the property. I can appreciate what the neighbors are coming from on that, is whatever. We're applying for C-store, gas bar with a small convenience offer with potential for a coffee counter. That's it. We have no more intentions. The property's not big enough to service that properly. That was one of the reasons why the gas bar had to be changed from the two lanes to the big long one, because there's just not enough room there to get through. We've looked at every which way from Sunday. If we could get a car wash on there, we'd be more than happy to do it, because it's a revenue generator. But realizing it is a residential area, it wouldn't fly. We didn't even go down that road. We maximize what we can on the property that we have. The other layout that originally was submitted was more productive for us. It utilized the entire property. But with the concerns that were raised by the neighbors, we realized that it was not an ongoing venture that way. That's why we came back and reassessed it, took all their comments to come up with something that we can live with, and hopefully that they can live with, and of course, council can live with too.
Well, this drawing is significantly better than the first one, particularly with the garbage, because the garbage was over here.
It was in the southwest corner.
Mr. Clement, you're absolutely right, but from an operational point of view,
I understand.
It worked the other way, but we can't live on operations alone. We have to consider the neighbors and all the factors that factor into it. And that's why we went through the two meetings to flush everything out.
Yeah.
And to the best of our ability, we've addressed them, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I there's no question that this particular layout is quite a bit better than the one that we had before. If there's any question about that.
Is there any other questions or comments from councillors? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Having trouble with the zoning thing, notwithstanding the issues in the area. I guess I'm going to start, Councillor Fielding, by just making a couple of comments. I mean, there's no question that the drawing that I'm looking at tonight is significantly improved on where it was. There are some small changes that should happen if there was going to be an approval here that nobody seems to have any problem with. It appears that going down the road that we can cover ourselves off with that type of thing. And we've been here for a little over 2 hours, which is not abnormal for one of these types of applications. I don't think it's a bad plan, and I think that the applicant has listened to the citizens and made some changes, albeit they still have some concerns. Most of the concerns are traffic related, and most of them are and noise. I mean, those are key issues. Noise is hard to deal with, and traffic is also very difficult to deal with because you really don't know where they're going to go. People do strange things when they jump in the vehicles and go in crazy directions. But my problem with dealing with this right now, notwithstanding people have had to come down here and maybe leave work early and all that kind of stuff, and then we sit through 2 hours of discussion. I think my position right now is I'd like to lay this over for one meeting, and I'd like to spend the time between now and then having some discussion with Martin Grady and others. Planning department.
Mr. Chairman, conversation should take place at the meeting so that all parties can be privy to the pardon me.
Well, no, I well.
Are you requesting a report back?
Well, sure, that's what we're. But for them to be able to write one, they have to understand the concerns.
Would you like me to put them down and I can provide it to them?
Oh, no.
A motion?
How many do I have to make? You know I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway. Appreciate you just doing your job. I'm going to do mine.
So we're asking the administration.
So I'm going to suggest that it be laid over for one meeting and that we get a report from the planning department.
It would probably come from zoning. Martin Grady is zoning.
All right, from the zoning department then, dealing with this issue of the zoning itself. There's just some long-term things that bother me about that, and I'm not convinced, notwithstanding what it reads, that there may not be another opportunity to do this a different way.
So you want
in that regard?
You want to find out if the rezoning is required or if they can do the development without going through the rezoning process?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I can already tell you what that report's going to read. But
and they stated that ESSO will not sell the site.
I understand.
Unless it's completely raised.
And I understand that. But that doesn't mean we can't chat and see where
where this can go. And I'm just more comfortable, and I think the people deserve the opportunity to either hear somebody from zoning, who would then have to come here with their report, and get into that just a wee bit deeper. James, you're on top of this. I think your comments tonight have been good. But in a couple of places, you're trying to do an interpretation, and it's hard to do it on the fly, where if we have a little bit of time to get very specific on some of these things, we may get the interpretation a little bit more broadened than what we have. And I would just feel more comfortable with that. It's a delicate issue. I don't think on the face of it, frankly, that I think the development, the way that it's set out here, redevelopment is a far better situation than what exists. It's a new company trying to come into the community and do things different than another company that was on the way out of these things. And I, the residents, although they've raised specific concerns, I'm not sure that they're totally opposed either. They're opposed to certain things about it. And I want to make sure that we cross all the T's and dot all the I's. And so I'd like to move that it be laid over and that we get that report.
To the next meeting in July?
Yeah, I want to do it in July because there's no meeting in August.
July 8th.
And put them right at the front end of the discussion, so that and then somebody may get a question from it one way or the other. And I don't see it taking as long as this, frankly. I know what the applicant, and I know the answers to their questions now. I know what the residents are thinking. While I don't think it's a bad situation overall, I just want to make sure that we take our time and get into it a little deeper in a few corners and see what we might get out of the zoning. So okay. That's what I'm going to move. And I appreciate it means people would have to come back to another meeting, but I just think it's more and more I started listening to what people had to say on both sides of the issue. I thought we could probably pull it off, but if Vessel is doing what they're doing, we don't need the facility sitting there the way that it is either. Nice to have it enhanced. I mean, it looks like
you don't want an empty lot, do you?
Well, you could wind up with an empty lot, but what you're more likely to get if they do that is you may wind up with something else going there that is more intrusive than what you've got.
Okay, so the motion is to lay it over until the July
8th meeting. And Mr. Chairman, I believe that that's for the rezoning and the variance as well.
Yes.
Same motion for the variance.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.